In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred with you, and I'm ready and set to get to our coolest conversations for today, and that's me speaking with Andy Chernoff, a founding member of the Dictators. He's also a producer of note, having worked with the likes of D-Generation and the Smithereens, the Figs, the Connection, Guided by Voices, Daddy Long Legs, and a host of others. His songs, in turn, have been recorded by the likes of the Ramones, Mary Weiss, Dion, the Helicopters, the Young Fresh Fellows, the Nomads, the Dolmans, etc., etc. And he's got a new single out. It's a former coolest song of the week called My Imaginary Friend. Let's hear some of that now, and then I'll be back with Andy for your coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
It's a sensation, a divine flirtation.
My imaginary friend.
I'm a believer with Sven got a fever for.
My imaginary friend.
She's got a guitar and she plays it loud. When I'm with her, I feel so proud.
I'm the Mighty Manfred, and for today's Coolest Conversations, I'm joined by the creative and driving force behind the legendary Dictators, Andy Chernoff. He's also a noted musician, songwriter, and producer. Hey, Andy, how are you?
I'm doing great, Manfred.
Well, you know, the last time we spoke, it was April 2017. Around that time, you'd written a tune that the Dolmans had recorded and released called Forever My Baby. Since then, you've moved out of New York City. You're in the Hudson Valley. How are things there?
Oh, fantastic. I couldn't imagine being happier. I was born and raised in New York City, but, you know, there's no real music scene there, but there is a music scene where I am now. I'm outside of Woodstock, and there are studios and there are musicians. I play in a bunch of bands. I couldn't be happier.
Wow. What are the bands that you play in?
I play with a guy called Spike Priggen. I play with a 70s cover band called Sensuous Tiger, and I do pick up things. You know, we did some local guys wanted to do a night of 70s British punk at the Colony in Woodstock, so we learned like 35 songs in three rehearsals, and we did that. It was a lot of fun. I like playing bass. I like not playing bass in my band. There's a whole different attitude about when you're running the band, you know, booking the rehearsals and telling people what to do. I like just showing up with my bass and trying to make the song sound good. I get a lot of pleasure out of that.
Would you have any gigs upcoming?
Not to the end of this year. End of this year, there is nothing because Thanksgiving. I'm leaving town Thanksgiving. I'm leaving town at Christmas. So everything's on hold till next year.
Well, let's see. Your new single, My Imaginary Friend, that came out earlier this year. It's this week's coolest song in the world. Has your imaginary friend ever met Harvey?
Classic. A classic, yes. My song is related to more to Harvey than any kind of like religious imagery or people believing in God or anything like that. So I would say, yes, my imaginary friend is Harvey.
Pretty cool. Now, did you have an imaginary friend even when you were a kid? Was Harvey your imaginary friend when you were a young tyke?
You know, I didn't have an imaginary friend. I had when I wanted to get over on my parents, I used to say my doctor said that I have to do this. So I had an imaginary doctor as a child to get over on my parents and stop doing my chores or whatever they were trying to get me to do.
And did that ever fly?
They kind of appreciated the cleverness. I'm not like a super talented musician songwriting, but I'm clever. I've always been pretty clever. So that's my way I get through life.
Well, what was the inspiration for the song then?
You know, I just have I got a list of titles, and I started working on the music, and the title fit the song, and then I had to make lyrics that weren't too obvious. Mm-hmm. So I put in stuff about Scientology and conspiracy theories, and
right.
So it's not like something you can interpret directly. Just sort of let it flow over you, you know. Enjoy the sounds.
Yeah. First though, when and where did you record My Imaginary Friend?
I have a home studio, which I do a lot of work in, and I've mixed records here, and it's pro level. I wouldn't say it's pro. I'd say it's not A level. It's A minus level. But I have all the equipment to make things sound good. My favorite saying is, every day you make music is a good day. So I'm making
music. I hear you. I'm right. I'm down with that.
If I'm making music, I'm happy. I can play in a club in front of 10, 20, 30 people. I'm as happier than if I'm playing in front of a big 5,000 seat thing, which I've played in front of more than that. I played in front of 20,000 people. It's less hassle.
Absolutely. I think I totally share that, because I am given the opportunity to play in front of 20, 30 people all the time.
Yeah. And it's an absolute pleasure. Meanwhile, I can go to the local club and I come home and sleep in my own bed. If I got to play in 20,000 people, I got to travel to Europe. I got to travel somewhere. I don't get enough sleep. I'm not eating right. I'm sleeping in some crappy hotel sometimes. The thing is, if you're a musician, as long as you're playing music, you're happy. It's such an easy thing to, you know, we're such simple people.
Well, let's talk about this musician, Richie Castellano. He's on lead guitar, and he is in Blue Oyster Cult. And your connection with Blue Oyster Cult goes way back to the recording of that first Dictators album, right? Their managers, producers, Murray Krugman and Sandy Pearlman, they produced Go Girl Crazy. How did you wind up in the Blue Oyster Cult orbit?
What happened was, I was a rock writer for a while. I used to write for Cream, and I had a fanzine called Teens and Wasteland Gazette. And I got to know Richard Meltzer, who was a big inspiration for the Dictators, Nick Tashies, who recently passed away, unfortunately, Lester Banks, all these guys. And they knew Sandy. So I met Sandy through my rock writing when I was a teenager. Mm-hmm. And me, Ross, and Scott, Ross Friedman, and Scott Kempner, we started a band. We had a house in Cohonkin, New York, and we invited Sandy up to hear us. We've been a band like maybe 5 months, not even. He comes up, he says, I like you. I'm going to get you signed. And he did. We got assigned to Epic. We were not even a band a year. So Sandy was managing Blue Oyster Cult, and we became their brother band, sister band, and obviously knew those guys for a long time. I've worked with Albert Bouchard many, many times, who's the original drummer. Joe Bouchard many times. Sandy passed away also. It's unfortunate that so many years have gone and people, bad things happen to them, but it was an absolute, I can't tell you how, what influence Sandy Pearlman, Richard Meltzer, Nick Tashies, these guys had in my life, how they really acted as mentors and allowed me to have the wonderful life I've had.
Well, how specifically did you wind up getting Richie on board to play on your single?
You know, I had the song recorded, and I wasn't able to really play these hot guitar parts. I had ideas.
Yeah.
And I actually was talking to Albert Bouchard, who's a good friend of mine, the drummer from Blue Oyster Cult. And I said, Albert, you think Don Roser, the lead guitar player from Blue Oyster Cult, would play? I said, I don't know about Don, but I bet you Richie would play on it. Mm-hmm. So he connected us, and Richie's a great guy, absolutely fantastic musician, great keyboard player, fantastic feel. So it was really through Albert Bouchard that I got connected with Richie Castellano.
Very cool. Well, you've written songs, I mentioned the Dolmans earlier, but you've also written songs for or with folks like Joey Ramone and Dion, Mary Weiss. Of course, you played in the Dictators and the Fleshtones. You've got the Master Plan. You produced all sorts of artists from D-Generation to the Smithereens. What other projects are you working on right now?
I have a project. I don't need to talk about it right now, but it involves Ross and Scott from the Dictators. Mm-hmm. Actually writing songs for that. And that's, I'm doing that. I play with my bands, but I also, see, I just literally just sold my apartment in New York and moved up to Mount Tremper in upstate New York where I'm living now. So I am in the midst. That took a lot of time, a lot of effort. Yeah. I don't know if you know if I've been involved in a move, but I'm still living among boxes. and I don't think, and I said, I'm not, I don't have any gigs until next year because of Thanksgiving, Christmas, you know, and I'm just sort of like getting my life organized right now. But in January, I think I will have something to announce that will be kind of interesting to anybody who likes anything I've done in the past.
Very cool. Well, one thing I wasn't aware of when I was digging around for some information was that you have a YouTube channel, and not only is your music featured there, but you also have travel videos. Tell us about that.
I love traveling. I've been to some weird places. The most interesting videos, if anybody wants to check it out, I went to Syria before ISIS destroyed all these ancient Roman ruins and these Crusader castles. It was a fantastic experience, and I've been to Iceland recently and Galapagos, and you know, obviously I've traveled a lot through music, and it's just one of the things I like to do. You know, I like to experience other cultures and see how other people live. Widen my horizons that way.
And when you take a trip like to Iceland or the Galapagos, is this in the auspices of just a regular vacation?
Well, Iceland I went to because my wife is a performer. She's a ventriloquist comedian, and she had a gig in Iceland. So they flew her there, and I just sort of tagged along, and then we rented a car and drove around Iceland. When we went to Galapagos, my wife is also a wildlife photographer, and it was her dream to go to Galapagos. And we went there, and she took some photos and have won National Geographic Awards and stuff like that. If anybody wants to check out her page, it's Carla with a C, Rhodes, R-H-O-D-E-S. And you'll see some really fantastic wildlife photographer. She's really, really skilled, and it's been a pleasure to see her photos.
You know, earlier you mentioned your fanzine, Teenage Wasteland Gazette, and the gentleman, you know, you were working with, working alongside, inspired by, and you mentioned Nick Toshes. So he recently passed away. What was your relationship with him?
You know, I just posted on my website a tribute to him. I had my fanzine. It's like I'm mimeographing this thing. I'm a sophomore in college, and it's just this silly, you know, trying to be funny stuff. And Nick and Richard Meltzer and Lester Bang, guys I kind of really, really idolized, just say, this is great. This is great. It was such a boost of confidence to a teenager. And Nick became the editor of We Magazine, and he got me interviews with who I interviewed, Alice Cooper. I interviewed Muddy Waters. I interviewed T-Rex, Mark Bolan. And I have photos of these people on my website also.
How old were you when you were talking with these guys?
I think I was a sophomore in college, so I was like 19 years old.
Okay.
And he gave me real work as a rock writer and interviewing these amazing artists. One time we did a trip. We both went to California to write about the band Uriah Heep. So we went to California together. And I remember I went to Rodney's English Disco.
Yes.
Rodney is now on Underground Garage, but I met Kim Fowley for the first time there. So Nick was a real writer. I was not a real writer. I eventually turned to music and started. I was more comfortable writing music. And Nick, of course, went on to write some amazing books about Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis, right, and eventually these crazy novels, these very dense, thick novels. But, you know, I'd seen him recently, and he didn't look well. And I know he had diabetes, and he was still drinking port every day. So as much as sad as I was about his death, it wasn't like a complete shock because he wasn't taking care of himself. And that was very sad to see.
Now, the A-side to the single My Imaginary Friend is our cool song of the world this week. And there's also a B-side about your real friend, Joey Ramone, titled Sweet Joey. I know you guys wrote songs together, but how far back does your relationship with him go? And how did you guys meet?
I met Joey before CBGB's. There was no place to play in New York, except for this one club called the Coventry on Queens Boulevard in Queens. And it was like where all the glam rock bands played. And Dick Taylor's used to play there. But we didn't look that good in glam. So we were wearing like our jeans, sneakers, and leather jackets. And every show we played, there's this tall guy in the back, Joey Ramone. And he was wearing like platform shoes. He's 6 foot five, six anyway. He wore platforms, you know, satin pants. And he looked like the guy who got beat up in high school. He looked really, you know, he was weird looking. That's when I first met him. You know, I didn't become really friends with him then, but he was always, you know, at this club, the Coventry. And then, of course, he joined the Ramones. I saw a poster with his picture in it. I said, wow, this guy's in a band. I went to see them at CBGB's, maybe 10 people in the audience. It was Ramones with Blondie opening up. This is probably early 1975, I would guess. And the Ramones were great. Blondie was not so great at that time. Eventually became obviously very, very successful and were made a lot of great records, but they were still getting their act together. But the Ramones were fantastic. They did like a 15-minute set, 10 songs, 15 minutes. And this is when I'm sitting through drum solos that were 20 minutes long.
Right.
They were a breath of fresh air. And we played with them. Dick Taylor played with the Ramones a number of times. And Joe became a good buddy of mine. I was with him when he took his last breath. I was in the hospital room. I just felt like writing a song, paying tribute to my relationship with him. And I think I just had to get that out of my system, I guess.
So when you went in to see the Ramones play that first time there at CBGB's, and you had known him, you know, in these platforms and his satin pants, and then you saw him up on stage rocking out, was that just blowing you away?
Yeah, I would say, yeah, I was pretty surprised. As his, you know, his brother Mickey Lee wrote a book, and he talks about how his brother was introverted and had trouble socializing, and but when he saw him on stage, he became another person. You know, he became Joey Ramone, the rock star, and that is true. He had trouble relating to people, and you know, rock and roll saved his life. Now later on, he became better adjusted, and you know, he still had his mental problems, but you know, he came out of his shell in real life, not just the onstage life.
I think that book, Mickey Lee's book, is called I Slept with Joey Ramone.
That's you're right. Yes. Yeah.
So when you guys got together to hang out, if you didn't talk about music, did you have some other shared interests that you guys were both passionate about?
Joey loved sushi. When I ate sushi a lot, Joey would see movies a lot. You know, we would talk about music a lot also, actually. He also liked to help other bands, you know, in the 90s, he tried to support other bands, you know, get them on bills and, you know, put on shows. He did a lot of that. Sushi was a big thing. We did that a lot.
What was your favorite sushi place?
He had a place around the corner from his house called, I think it was Hasaki on East 9th Street. Went there a lot. Went some fancier places too, if it was a, you know, group of people. But the interesting thing is you walk down the street with Joe Ramone in New York City, you know, then the guy drives by in a truck and goes, "Hey, Joey!" Guy in the police car, "Joey!" You know, he was not, he couldn't blend in. He was very tall, very noticeable. And he would stop and talk to people. I'm standing there, you know, Joey, I'm hungry. You know, he would talk to his fans for 20 minutes. You know, when we're going someplace.
Well, speaking of sushi, it's just something that popped back in my head. So you're also a kind of a wine connoisseur, aren't you? What was the story on that?
I was in the wine business for a while. I you know, passed my sommelier tests and everything, and it's one of my passions. Yes.
And there in the Hudson Valley, I mean, I have no idea what's you know, whether they're vineyards or wines from upstate New York. Are there
a lot of wines? Yes. As a matter of fact, Fred Smith from television makes wine in upstate New York.
Does that mean does he wash his feet before he steps on those grapes?
He doesn't do that, but he makes excellent wine with his wife, Paula.
And what is the wine called?
It's called Cherugino, Paula Cherugino and Fred Smith. They just put their names together. I don't know if they have a website. I'm sure they got a website, but I absolutely recommend their wine. They do a thing. They get the grapes from California and Washington, and then they make it in their barn. So they don't grow the grapes.
Right.
Which is very common for winemakers. Sometimes winemakers, they just purchase the juice, the grapes. Very well.
Well, cool. Well, Andy, thanks so much for talking with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Well, it was a pleasure, Manfred. Good to talk to you again.
Yeah, well, I want us to take a listen now to your song inspired by Joey, Sweet Joey. It's Sweet Joey from Andy Chernoff and Little Steven's Underground Garage. Singing about Sweet Joey, that was Andy Chernoff here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. Sweet Joey, of course, is Joey Ramone, and the song is a B-side to Andy's latest single, My Imaginary Friend. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to Andy for speaking with me, and thanks also to Olivia Callahan for producing our Coolest Conversations podcast. Please remember to follow and subscribe. Next time around, I'll be chatting with Tegan Quinn of the duo Tegan and Sarah. That's your next Coolest Conversations, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.